Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy. We want to educate ourselves and learn out loud, hear about the Middle East, and understand what's going on. When you look at America today, as a matter of fact, Pat and I were talking about the Louisiana Purchase just recently.
Yes.
That, by the way, the Louisiana Purchase is not the purchase of Louisiana.
No.
It's not the purchase of Louisiana. It's not New Orleans Purchase. It's everything west of the Mississippi.
Well, I guess you knew that.
Hey.
Mr. Washington, D.C.
you couldn't wait on that one, huh?
Oh, no.
I was wondering why he was a Saints fan. Now I figure it out. He thought that Thomas Jefferson purchased New Orleans for the Saints. The Louisiana Purchase, man. It's a Saints fan. But probably a lot of people think of that because it's Louisiana. Yeah. It actually is Louisiana. The state is. But the Louisiana Purchase and understanding. So I'm talking about the borders, the lines. You have Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina. Men decided to draw those lines there. They have not always been there. I mean, originally it was just one big mass of land. Mm-hmm. And they began to draw in, this is a state, that's a state. There's a whole bunch of stories behind every state that's drawn. But that's the same thing in the Middle East. And so what we want to do, we want to begin to understand the Middle East, because today you're hearing things about an Ottoman Empire. You're hearing things about a caliphate, which really is an Ottoman Empire type situation where, you know, they want all these countries, we think, to come together and have one large, you know, Islamic rule caliphate, which means the Quran is the law and they operate under those principles. And so then you start finding out about a history and those lines that are the lines that are drawn in the Middle East have been drawn by the French, and they've been drawn by Great Britain. And so when you look at Iraq, those things were just drawn in there. You look at Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Syria and all these. As a matter of fact, we're going to go this journey right now. I want you to take a look at this. And this is way back. We're going to go all the way back to World War I, where the whole world was at war. It had been won, and prior to that was the Ottoman Empire, which was all there, and they're going to slice and dice it up. Take a look at this, and you're going to begin to understand. We're going to go on this whole journey today to understand better what's taking place in the Middle East. So we want you to be able to see this video. Glenn Beck does a really good job talking about World War I and what took place at this history when you go back 100 years. Matter of fact, take a look at this. We're going to get educated on the Middle East to understand really what's happening today, but we've got to go back to World War I.
All of the peace accords and the ceasefires and the nonviolent pledges, none of them ever get to the root of the problem, and that is the why. Until the why is addressed, the cycle of violence and hate is just going to continue. Tonight, we're going to go after the why and the myths. And I want you to know, at some point, you will see how the Arabs look bad, the Palestinians look bad, the Jews look bad, the Americans look bad, the French and the British all look bad. But it is the root of the current conflict between Israel and Palestine, and it is not what you're being told. So, what we have to do is actually rewind. The Arab-Israeli conflict, we have to go before the 2014 clashes. We have to go back past the 2012, the clashes of the summer, and the second Intifada, and the first Intifada, before the Six-Day War, which happened in 1967, all the way back to 1948. That's, sometimes you'll get that picture. But that doesn't go far enough. You actually have to go back a little further in time, and you stop where no one stops, and that is here. 1916 and World War I. The world is at war for the first time, and it is divided. And it is divided like this. You have the Allied powers in the orange, and then you have in the purple the Central powers. The Allies, the U.S., Britain, France, Russia, Italy, Romania, Serbia, and then the Central powers, the bad guys, if you will, of World War I. Germany, Austria-Hungary, Bulgaria, and the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire. We never learn about the Ottoman Empire, do we? This is the last time the Arab world had a united Islamic state led by a religious leader. The Ottoman Empire, the Caliphate, The Allies knew the Ottoman Empire could shut down key shipping routes effectively and then cripple Britain's economy, France. So they knew the Ottoman Empire was going to be a problem. They had to neutralize it. So Great Britain sent over an army officer from Britain, and his name was T.E. Lawrence. There was a movie made about him, a great movie with Peter O'Toole called Lawrence of Arabia. Well, he needed to rally support among other Arabs to fight against the Ottoman Empire. He promised them absolutely everything. The moon and the stars and everything underneath, including one key thing: rule over a new united Arab kingdom of Greater Syria. Remember this, a united kingdom of Greater Syria, which would replace this, the Ottoman Empire here. Now, at the time, Palestine was part of the Ottoman Empire. Here's a map from 1851 of the Ottoman Syria. It encompassed present-day Syria, Lebanon, Israel, parts of Iraq, and Jordan. This is so critical that you remember this map, because this map plays a role today. But remember, this is what Lawrence of Arabia said you can fight for, because you're going to get it. To get to the root of the current Middle East conflict, that is your starting point, this map. Reestablishing these border lines. It's at the center of everything that is happening today. T.E. Lawrence was successful. He convinced powerful Arabs and their armies to fight the Ottoman Empire. The problem here, Great Britain never intended to honor the promises that they made. They had used the Arabs in order to protect their own interests. Remember, they needed to get the Ottoman Empire out of the way. The entire time Lawrence was negotiating with the Arabs, Great Britain, behind everybody's back, was negotiating with France and planning how they were going to actually divide up the Middle East after the war. They needed to make sure there was no united Arab kingdom that would ever get in the way. That wasn't in the cards. So there's two people, and these are the two names that you have to remember. Remember these names: François Georges Picot of France and Britain's Mark Sykes. They led the negotiations. They came up with a whole bunch of new borders. I just want you to remember these two names because it's critical. Sykes-Picot. Sykes-Picot. Here is what the British and the French and the Russian diplomats secretly agreed to on May 16, 1916. Remember, the goal was to divide the Arabs, not to unite them, divide them so they could protect the trade routes. They didn't care about the Arabs. They didn't care about the Jews. They didn't care about anything. They wanted the trade routes. The Middle East was now fractured, which, if you keep it fractured, the British and their allies in the region can control it. They wanted it that way. So new lines were drawn. And these new lines never existed before. There were no countries like this before, but they existed under Sykes-Picot. The Arabs were forced to accept this Western European model of the nation states because they had no choice. Yet, no one on television, our president, will not sit down and actually talk. I don't even know if the president really knows this. It's easy, it's not hard, his advisors do, but why aren't we talking about this? Because if you look at this, if you understand what happened in this part of history, you understand everything revolves around this, and you know what to do with the problems today. But the problem here is, at this time, the goal was to fracture the Arab world. But just a few years later, in 1921, Palestine was split for the very first time. Under the British mandate, the area of east of the Jordan River was called Transjordan, and it went to the Emir Abdullah of the Hashemites. West of the Jordan River was the region for a Jewish homeland in Palestine. It was not an official state at the time. It was just a safe place to live. Britain, at the time, convinced Woodrow Wilson's League of Nations to support these new boundaries that led to the creation of the mandate for Palestine and Transjordan. They were both under British control. This is the real beginning that you never really hear about. 2 decades before Israel was officially declared a state by the UN, this was happening. Britain and France set the entire structure up for them. It wasn't about the Jews, and it wasn't about the Arabs. They were scapegoats. I want to explain something. You know, Persia is where chess comes from. And if you're a chess player, the first thing that you learn are who the players are. And the players may be different now than they were when they were originally done, but it's striking to me, this chess set is for the Americans against the British, there's King George. But who stands right next to the king? His advisors, they're the bishops, they're the church. Okay, so church, state, and the religion working together. This back row, these guys are all powerful. The pawns mean nothing. A king will throw the pawns out into the middle of the board, and you can take all of his pawns. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. So the pawns, the Jews, and the Palestinians, mean nothing to the people who just want power. So, Arab resentment grows in the wake of that treaty, Sykes-Picot, where they have divided everything and made new lines. They wanted, the Palestinians, the Arabs, what was promised to them, the rule of Greater Syria. Remember that map, Greater Syria. This agreement, with all the fragmentation, utterly destroyed their hope. There was no hope. They weren't going to get that. So how would the Arab world be able to unite now? They needed a new rallying cry. They would use the Balfour Declaration, Britain's promise of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. They wanted to use it to their advantage. So they needed, the Palestinians needed to start blaming the Jews, the pawns. The Jews were already being persecuted in Ukraine at the time. They needed a safe haven. The Arabs were promised the exact same thing, but they were now blaming the Jews, and it proved to be the most effective tool in uniting the Arab world. During the 1920s and the 1930s, the Arab and Palestinians, the anti-Jewish rhetoric eventually spilled over into violence, and they launched a string of attacks like you couldn't believe, one after another, devastation. And it all culminated with the 1936 Arab revolt against the British peacekeeping troops. The excuse for the violent uprising? They said Jews were emigrating in such large numbers that they were forcefully displacing Arabs out of the land. Now, Hitler's persecution was underway, so there were indeed Jews migrating. But I want to show you the numbers. Between World War I and World War II, the Jewish population in Palestine increased by 470,000, okay, Jews increase. Okay, but at the same time during that period, when they were saying, hey, you're chasing all of the Arabs out of this area, the Palestinian population increased by 588,000. So they weren't being displaced at all. There were 608,000 Jews in the area, and 1,269,000, I think, Arabs living in mandated Palestine by the time 1948 runs. So Jews could not be displacing the Arabs with numbers like this. It didn't make any sense. The Jews were a scapegoat. They were a pawn. Unfortunately, so were the Palestinians. The easiest way to get to the goal that they had, the Arabs had, all along, was to start just using the Jewish people. The motive becomes clear now when you see how the Arab world reacted when the British mandate in Palestine was set to expire. The Palestinian Arabs were about to be presented with a chance to finally have what they said they always dreamt of. All they wanted was their own land, right? So now here comes the UN, and they have this mandate. In 1947, the Jewish Agency appealed to the United Nations. Watch this.
In Palestine, they will see what the Jewish people, inspired by the hope of reconstituting their national home after the long, weary centuries of their homelessness, and relying upon the honor and the pledged word of the world community, has achieved in a few short years, against great odds,
and seemingly insurmountable physical handicaps. We hope that that people, now rebuilding again its national life and its ancient homeland, will be welcomed before long by you to this noble fellowship of the United Nations.
Okay, so remember, the British put together this partition, and they had this partition, Transjordan and the Israeli state. So it was a two-state solution. It was split 56% Jewish, 43% Arab. 56 looks big, but much of the land's not sufficient for crops. So it's pretty close. Jerusalem, an international zone. The Jewish people accepted the plan. And if the Palestinian homeland was the goal for the Arab world, not the Palestinians, the Arab world, all they had to do was agree. But remember, the scapegoat goes away. The pawns are no longer being able to be controlled and used by the kings. The real goal of the kings was uniting the Arab kingdom, one united Arab kingdom, a return of the Ottoman Empire, gaining control of greater Syria, which is all of that land. If you make peace with Israel, that all goes out the window. So when they were presented with what they said they wanted and always wanted, the nation of their own, they said no. And then all hell broke loose.
So this is so important. I know we're just grateful for the Blaze covering this, doing this research right here. We have more when we come back from this break, but we're going to find out. So what was this Khorasan cell that was just bombed in Syria? This all is going to make sense as you follow the program all the way through, because we're going to begin to understand this caliphate has been around since World War One, is what they were promised. Mm-hmm. For that, as Christians and Jews, we have to say, but Israel, you can't have Israel in that caliphate. Yeah. But today's program, we have an intensive on the Middle East. We're trying to really understand what's taking place right here, and thank the Blaze Television for doing some deep research on what's taking place. But you're hearing things like ISIS and ISIL and Hezbollah and Hamas and Al-Qaeda and different versions of Al-Qaeda, and different things happen like that. And you're wondering, like, which is what? And you're going to find out as we're progressing, all of these organizations are working towards the end game. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to what is the Arab end game in this. That's coming. But notice that out of the middle of nowhere, we start hearing, because ISIS is the issue, ISIL's the issue, Hamas is the issue with Israel. Then all of a sudden we start hearing about, you just bombed the Khorasan cell in Syria? I mean, what was that about?
Who are they?
Right. As a matter of fact, watch right now.
And finally, there were also separate strikes in another part of Syria against another al-Qaeda affiliate, Khorasan. What can you tell us about that?
The Khorasan group is an offshoot of al-Nusra, so it's an al-Qaeda affiliate. We had very good indications that this group, which is a very dangerous group, was plotting and planning imminent attacks against Western targets to include the U.S. homeland. And it was on that basis that we struck targets, Khorasan targets inside Syria.
Let me press on that. You knew of a possible attack against the United States homeland?
We knew that there was active plotting going on for an attack on the U.S. homeland. I won't be able to go into much more detail than that, but we were aware of it.
But do you believe that threat has been eliminated?
We believe that the individuals that were plotting and planning it have been eliminated, and we're going to continue, as I said, to assess the effectiveness of our strikes going through today.
Admiral Kirby, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, George.
Khorasan cell, like, where does, what? I thought it was al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah. It's like, oh my goodness. And the Blaze Television, we're trying to give a biblical understanding, and this is helping us give a biblical understanding of what's taking place, what happened in World War One. So we're going to have right now the Khorasan aspect of this terrorism, an affiliate. I'm an affiliate of them.
Yeah, right.
And,
of terror.
Yeah, terror. And listen to this. This is powerful. It's going to help you understand what's going on.
Iran's desire. Let me start here. In the aftermath of 9/11, intelligence gathering efforts on al-Qaeda were obviously ramped up. Not long after, we start to see a picture of a very shadowy organization, and it begins to emerge, and what their goals and what their reasons are behind them, and they are scattered all around. We think of al-Qaeda just over here in Afghanistan in the caves, but that's not true. They were mobilizing to become a global movement. and they would scour the Middle East, and they were looking for where there were historic reasons to be, that's really important, and where unrest and instability existed, and so they set up shop. So they start with the Taliban over here. They also go all over, pop up all over the Middle East. The attacks are carried out in northern Africa. You start to see them in this area. You start to see them in Yemen. You start to see them in northern Saudi Arabia. And also another one, a very small one over here. This is the Khorasan area. This is a really important area. So there's Khorasan. Got it? Historically speaking, it's a province of Khorasan, and it is the birthplace of modern Persian culture. Khorasan was a province in the Caliphate, another crazy word, that existed between 600 and 700 AD. It's important that you understand the Caliphate, the Caliphate that Khorasan belonged to looked like this. It went all across the Middle East, okay, into Tunisia. And now, does this map look familiar, a chalkboard that I might have drawn, in times past? That's the original caliphate that Khorasan was a part of. Now, there's an old Islamic hadith. It is a hadith is a written tradition or a prophecy. And in the prophecy, it says that an Islamic army will rise up from Khorasan, right here, and it will fight, and it will restore the entire caliphate map. Again, radical Islamic terrorists do not recognize the current lines, not even Iran's. What are these lines? The map lines that you are seeing here that I'm going to erase are the map lines that we talked about last week. This is something that you must get your friends to understand. These map lines, according to these people, do not exist at all. Why? Because these map lines were originally drawn by the West. They were drawn by the French and the English. And those lines are called Sykes-Picot. So that is what this map looks like. There are no borders in this map. It's one giant border. And so when you see Al-Qaeda, and they're named different things, the Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab, and I don't know all the names of them, but they're in different regions. Why? Because they are working on this area of responsibility, this area of responsibility, this area of responsibility, and they bleed out, get stronger, and then tie it all together in the end. So, naturally, because this is what they're going for, and they are the wrong kind of Muslims for the Iranians. The Iranian government views Khorasan as a massive threat. Because, let me show you something else. Iran currently is here. This is Iran. But remember, Iranians, they believe in the 12th Imam. The 12th Imam is supposed to crawl out of a well, and he's supposed to come. They've already got a road built, and he's supposed to come from his little well. I'm wishing. And then he crawls out, and he goes down this road, and he comes to a place here in Iraq. And then what does he do? He takes and he makes a caliphate in the region as well. And their caliphate, well, it's I just made fun of the 12th Imam, and that's what's happening. Their caliphate is something like this as well. But they have to kill all the wrong Muslims. The Sunnis have to kill the Shias, and the Shias have to kill the Sunnis. It depends which one gets the caliphate. So now that we have this little background, let's look at what the administration did suddenly to include Khorasan as a threat? What happened? What has the administration been trying to accomplish recently? Remember, the president said they are organizing the Middle East. John Kerry made it very clear and said, you know what we have to do? We want to work with Iran. We want to get Iran together with us and help. And they didn't rule out the possibility of joint military operations. Watch.
Look, we're open to discussions if there's something constructive that can be contributed by Iran, if Iran is prepared to do something that is going to respect the integrity and sovereignty of Iraq and the ability of the government to reform.
Okay. All right. So we want to work with Iran. What? They're our enemies. What are you talking about? Why would they do that? Well, very good reason. Why is Iran a proxy in Syria? Remember, they have Hezbollah. Hezbollah is here in Syria. This is a proxy state. Assad is being propped up by Iran. Because Iran, remember, wants to push this way. They're going to push this way, and they'll push through the area of Iraq into Syria, and Hezbollah is pushing down this way. So when you have the Khorasan group, remember, the Khorasan group is here. Well, wait a minute. Did we bomb them here? No. The Khorasan group was relocated here because they're against Iran. They've got to stop the proxy. They've got to stop Iran and Hezbollah over here. It's a civil war. It's a religious civil war, if you will. It's the Sunnis and the Shias going after. Now, it's no secret. The administration desperately sought Iran's partnership against ISIS. They refused. In fact, the head of Iran laughed from the hospital at the secretary, John Kerry, and Obama. But wait a minute. We said we bombed these people. Why did we bomb these people? What happened? What else happened last week? Here in New York, Iranian officials were here in New York for negotiations on Tehran's nuclear program. There is a deadline on that, November 24th. Both the U.S. and the Iranian officials share optimism, and I know I do too, that a deal remains possible. Oh, it's absolutely sure. Mm-hmm. Talks were reportedly starting slow with Iran, wanting the Obama administration to show more flexibility. By Friday, after 5 days of American bombing on this little known terror cell called Khorasan, hope in a deal suddenly improved. Khorasan, by all accounts, other than the administration's sudden revelation, is no bigger of a threat to America than ISIS is. In fact, there are many, many threats in the Middle East that are bigger. Several al-Qaeda cells worth striking ahead of Khorasan. Khorasan may not be a threat to the U.S., but they are a very big deal to Iran. That's what happened. The president extended the olive branch to Iran. We killed their enemy. Our enemy, we left them alone over here. We didn't care about al-Qaeda, Khorasan, al-Qaeda. We didn't care about them because this was our enemy. And so let them destabilize that. That'll be good. We'll just use that and we'll kill them later. But now we need Iran. And so when they moved over here, we said they're a big threat. No, they're not. We've known about them for a long, long time. They're no threat. This was a gift to the Iranians. He would never be able to say that we're openly working with the Iranians, politically devastating here and abroad. Iran wouldn't be able to say they're working with America. That would invite an avalanche of terrorism in their own land. Revenge for siding with a great Satan and betraying the Middle East. Here's the thing I want you to know. We are never, ever, ever going to win this war if we don't understand a few things. One, the enemy of my enemy is not our friend. It doesn't work that way. Is Iran good? Is al-Qaeda Khorasan good? Was Mubarak good? Syria, what's his name? The Assad, good? Was Muammar Gaddafi? None of them are good. Saudi Arabia, are they good? No. Why would we side with Saudi Arabia, who are oppressing women and homosexuals? To keep them at bay? These guys are oppressing women and homosexuals too. This is insanity. They are not our friends. None of them are our friends. There is one friend, and they are right here. And it's the state of Israel. That's the only friend, and we keep betraying those people. Why? Because we're looking at this all upside down. Iran, we said Iran was our enemy, so we let Khorasan just leave it alone. Then ISIS became a bigger enemy, and so Iran, we need them as a friend, so let's kill Iran's enemy, Khorasan. What do you think's going to happen? Do you think that works out for us? Does that make us look like we know what we're doing, like we're decent people, that we have any principles whatsoever? No. Two, we're repeating the same mistakes because we have short or no vision. By playing the old game, we're only making it worse every time. Three, we have to reconcile the past. Sykes-Picot is the problem. They are trying to reboot the whole Middle East. It is slipping through our fingers because it was never right in the first place. Why are we defending borders that we have no place even having putting those borders in place? Let them kill each other. I know it sounds horrible, but this is insanity. If you can come up with a better strategy that recognizes that we have to reconcile the past and it's rooted in principles and we can save people, I'm willing to hear. I'm absolutely willing to hear it. But Sykes-Picot is the root of the problem here. It's not our wealth. It's not our religion. It's nothing. They want their caliphate, period. And four, the intel that the president is getting is either foolish, it's criminal, or it's both. Yesterday, the president came out. I'm amazed by this. The president came out yesterday. This man can't take responsibility for a thing. He came out yesterday and said, hey, I just want you to know, not really my fault. It was bad intelligence. Mr. President, I'm begging you. If you really believe that, if that's true, then fire those people who have been so wrong in the past. If somebody has given me this kind of information and has been this wrong for this long, I don't even have to fire them. They tender their resignation because they're humiliated. When are you going to start firing people and put people in that know what they're talking about? The guy who has his own stupid cable TV show, he knows more than your advisors do. I'm available for consultation. I won't charge you anything. More on this theory coming up in just a second.
Think about this. We're going to go right into a break, but you have to understand this. I like what Pastor John Kilpatrick just did a teaching called Israel's Coming Land Grab, talking about how Psalms 83 is coming to pass. You just heard a depiction of how this whole gathering of enemies of Israel are gathering around like a ring around Israel. This is when God is going to show himself mighty. But when we get back from this break, we're going to talk about what is the Arab endgame? And understand God's will is going to come to pass. What God says is going to come to pass. And we're about to see God do some awesome things in the Middle East. But things have to get in place. And that's what's actually taking place now. This is so important because you're watching Psalms 83 come to pass. And we're trying to get a biblical perspective of what's taking place in the Middle East. And you're looking, when you hear the word caliphate, think about Psalms 83. And as Pastor John Kilpatrick preached on this, three messages called Israel's Coming Land Grab. You got to see it. We'll make this available to you on the VFN Torch so you can just listen biblically to how this thing's going to unfold. But understand, in the middle of all that is our friend Israel. Now, here is the Arab endgame. Listen to how it's explained, the Arab endgame.
Let me just make one more note here. I want to tie this all together here. When I learned about Sykes-Picot, in today's, I know I read about Sykes-Picot, you know, years ago when we were at Fox, and I put up on the chalkboard and I said, hey, this is what's going to happen to the Middle East. But it didn't all fall into place until I learned about ISIS and ISIL and the difference between ISIS and ISIL. Now it all makes sense to me. And now you'll be able to figure out what is really going on and whether we should get involved and who we should be involved with. Let me give you the full context of what motivates the radical elements in the Middle East. It helps explain ISIL with much more clarity. Back to the beginning. Sykes-Picot. What did Sykes-Picot do? Bring up the map, please. Here's the map. Sykes-Picot was something where they said, hey, what we're going to do, Arab world, you just fight with us on World War II or World War I. You just fight with us. And we're going to give you rule of the greater Syria. This is greater Syria. This is what they were promised. Remember, they were promised a united Arab rule. They wanted the caliphate back. They wanted the Ottoman Empire. So they said, hey, we'll give you all of this. Look at this map. But they lied. Now, the difference between ISIL and ISIS. Get to it here in a second. How do you get there? If you felt like you've been lied to. Well, first thing you do is you have to destabilize the region. And how do you destabilize the region? What did Sykes-Picot do? Sykes-Picot made all of these new maps, and they divided, drew new borders that had never been bordered, had never been drawn before. And these borders put people who were never together under one rule, knowing, the British knowing, that if they did that, it would take a strong man to keep them from fighting and killing each other. So they knew that dictators would rise up and no one would ever agree. They'd be all so busy in those own little borders, keeping their own little thing happy, that the West could continue to do whatever it is the West needed to do. So the first thing you need to do, if you want this, you want this promise, is you have to destabilize. You have to go after the dictators. Our president and all of us have cheered when we got rid of the dictators in Egypt. Yay, a revolution, totally isolated. Libya, yay, a revolution, totally isolated. Iraq, yay, a revolution, totally isolated. Now we're going after Syria. Yeah, let's get him, totally isolated. Who's next? I'm telling you that ISIS, when we start giving the people of ISIL or ISIS, when we start saying we're going to fight them and we're going to fight them with Muslim extremists who know all this history, they know what this is. When we say we're going to arm them, I'm telling you, this is the real target. Assad will fall. And next will be Jordan. Yay! And Lebanon. Yay! And then Israel. Look at the map. The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. That's the difference between ISIL and ISIS. The L stands for Levant. It stands for this part all the way down to Egypt. They're doing nothing but remolding the map to closer to their heart's desire and what they were promised 100 years ago. Now is their opportunity to achieve what they've always wanted from the very beginning. A return to a unified Arab kingdom. What a surprise, a caliphate. Islamic rule. There's no judgment on this one way or another. This is just the fact. They want an end to the West and the what the West created with Sykes-Picot. To get there, the best way to do it is to destabilize all these dictators, get them out of the way. So now there's chaos. Unite them behind this idea of getting rid of Sykes-Picot. And you use the Israelis and the Palestinians as pawns and scapegoats. You call these the bad guys, these the good guys, but you don't really care. Why? Because you want rule of greater Syria and you want an end to Sykes-Picot. You think this is a crazy theory?
Glenn Beck's come up with another crazy theory. It's not true at all.
Really? This morning, as I was reviewing this, we've worked on this show now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks. And as I was reviewing it, Dan, our head writer, came in and said, "You are not going to believe what I just found." I said, "What?" He said, "Glenn, ISIL just released a new video. Been out for a while. We just found it this morning. Here's ISIL in their own words on what's happening Why are they doing this? Watch.
دولة الإسلام قامت بدماء الصادقين.
Right now in the side of Sham, as you can see, this is the so-called border of Sykes-Picot.
The border of Sykes-Picot. What are they after? It said it. This is their production. You'll notice that this is playing all over the Middle East. It's called the end of Sykes-Picot. Here he is on the Syrian border showing how they've erased it and how Britain and France lied to the Arab world. All they want was promised after World War I when the Ottoman Empire was defeated, and they'll use anyone to get it, including the Jews, including the Palestinians. This is why there'll never be a two-state solution. That's not the goal. Never has been. Until the region is fully under Arab control, the fighting will never, ever, ever stop. There is no easy solution. I don't know how you turn the cycle of violence around. But the first thing we have to do is put facts in place. You have to start with the truth. Until tonight, I don't know anybody who's bothered to even investigate any of this. And this is not, I mean, we're not some grand investigator. I don't want to pump this up. We're just looking at history. Who's doing that? How are we expected to understand what ISIL is, what ISIS wants? How are we to expect them to, you know what we're going to do? We're going to wipe them out. We're going to tame them. We're going to reorganize. This is the president. We're going to organize the Middle East. Mr. President, may I suggest the organization is already happening, and you've cheered for that organization. Here's the real problem. I don't agree with the guy we had in Egypt or Libya or Syria or Iraq. We've made friends with all of these guys. Why? Because we violated our principles. England violated their principles. They didn't behave with honor in the first place. We haven't behaved with honor. If we behaved with honor, we would never have supported somebody with secret prisons. But here's why they say, well, you can't upset the apple cart, because all those people at the State Department, which you hopefully found out about on For the Record last night, all those people at the State Department, they know about this. That's why they say you can't get rid of these people, because they know exactly what will happen. And it's happening. Now, the question is, why are we there? What are we going to do about it? What is our responsibility? Our responsibility is to first tell the truth. Because you know what? You know who's a pawn? It's Israelis, the Palestinians, and the American people, the Canadian citizen, the British citizen, the French citizen, all the citizens of the world that have shed their blood and their
Think about this. Psalms 83 is coming to pass right in our faces. It says, Psalms 83 says, oh God, do not remain silent. Do not turn a deaf ear. Do not stand aloof, oh God. See how our enemies growl, how our foes rear their heads. With cunningness, they conspire against your people. They plot against those you cherish. Come, they say, let us destroy them as a nation so that Israel's name will be not remembered anymore. And they're conspiring. He says, with one mind, they plot together. They form an alliance against the tent of Edom. And it goes on talking about this is that whole uprising where God's going to show himself mighty. You're seeing the fulfillment, it looks like, of Psalms 83. This is not the Ezekiel prophecy, but you're looking at that coming together right now. The sad thing about it is, one of our vice presidents is one that sold Al Jazeera, the network that they're using, they're broadcasting this stuff on. But many are the plans in the man's heart, but it's the Lord's plans that prevail. All you can get so much more about this program on The Torch. Go to VFNTV.com and go to The Torch, because we'll make these teachings available to you, access to be able to get to John Kilpatrick, Church of His Presence, teaching on the coming land grab and understanding that Psalms 83 is coming into focus. We appreciate, you know, everything with Blaze doing this research on there. Obviously, you can find out more about that at theblazetv.com. This is exciting days. God is about to show himself mighty to Israel. When Israel's eyes are opened up, Gentiles, understand the full number could be coming in. So if you're not right with God, you need to get right with God now. You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.